This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, it is great to be with you today. My name is Janet Mufford. In today for Tony Perkins, and what a news-filled day today. Our phone number, as always, 866-372-7234. We're going to be taking your calls a little later on in the program today, and there is a lot to talk about. I don't know if you caught the Comey press conference this morning. He didn't end up taking any questions afterward, which a lot of people had remarked upon and said, this is very odd. Here's the FBI director standing up, talking all about the things that Hillary Clinton did improperly, all the things that she did with her email servers, by the way, not just a server. And then he ends it the way he did. Well, okay, maybe James Comey's going to come through. Sure, we don't have any faith in Loretta Lynch. We don't have any faith in the Department of Justice. We know everything is politicized over there. But surely the FBI director, James Comey, is going to have some integrity, or at least stand up in front of everybody and say, I resign. This whole thing is tainted. The Lynch thing, the Bill Clinton thing, meeting on the planes, FBI questioning of Hillary over the weekend, and she's all happy. It's ridiculous. I did not anticipate that Comey would say what he said, but I do want to play for you what Comey said, and a good chunk of it, because I think as we go through our days, we hear soundbite after soundbite. Maybe you didn't have a chance to listen to the Comey press conference, and you really should have, because it was chock full of stuff that you might not have heard on the mainstream media. So let's go to our cuts. First of all, here is James Comey talking about the fact that this was all referred, first of all, from the Intelligence Community Inspector General, and focused on whether classified information was transmitted on Hillary's personal email server. And it turns out, as I mentioned before, there was more than one. Here's cut one.
Now, I have so far used the singular term email server in describing the referral that began our investigation. It turns out to have been more complicated than that. Secretary Clinton used several different servers and administrators of those servers during her 4 years at the State Department. And she also used numerous mobile devices to send and to read email on that personal domain. As new servers and equipment were employed, older servers were taken out of service, stored, and decommissioned in various ways. Piecing all of that back together to gain as full an understanding as possible of the ways in which personal email was used for government work has been a painstaking undertaking, requiring thousands of hours of effort. For example, when one of Secretary Clinton's servers was decommissioned in 2013, the email software was removed. That didn't remove the email content, but it was like removing the frame from a huge unfinished jigsaw puzzle and then dumping all the pieces on the floor. The effect was that millions of email fragments ended up in the server's unused or slack space. We searched through all of it to understand what was there and what parts of the puzzle we could put back together again. FBI investigators also read all of the approximately 30,000 emails that Secretary Clinton provided to the State Department in 2014. Where an email was assessed as possibly containing classified information, the FBI referred that email to any government agency that might be an owner of that information, so that agency could make a determination as to whether the email contained classified information at the time it was sent or received, or whether there was reason to classify it now, even if the content had not been classified when it was first sent or received. And that's the process sometimes referred to as up-classifying. From the group of 30,000 emails returned to the State Department in 2014, 110 emails in 52 email chains have been determined by the owning agency to contain classified information at the time they were sent or received. 8 of those chains contained information that was top secret at the time they were sent. 36 of those chains contained secret information at the time. And 8 contained confidential information at the time. That's the lowest level of classification. Separate from those, about 2,000 additional emails were upclassified to make them confidential. Those emails had not been classified at the time that they were sent or received.
All right, now let's return to what Hillary Clinton herself has said. She has made all sorts of talking points available to all of us about her email problem, which apparently is no longer a problem. But one of the things she's continually said is that her emails weren't classified. They weren't classified. She said in the past that her emails, when they were sent and received, were not classified. So right then and there, you have the FBI director blowing that up in her face, blowing that up, that claim, up in everybody's face. Everybody who ever believed her, everybody who ever said, this is just a mistake, oops, sorry. Kind of like the whole claim that she was just wanting to reduce everything to being on one device. That also was not true. Well, then he went on to talk about the fact that they didn't find clear evidence that Secretary Clinton or her colleagues intended to violate laws governing the handling of classified information. He did go on to say there was evidence that they were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information. So here we are. We're watching this press conference. We're listening to what the FBI director has to say. I, for one, am thinking, could it be? Could it be? Maybe they really are going to do something. Maybe she really is going to be held accountable. And then he drops the bomb. Let's go to cut three.
Although there is evidence of potential violations of the statutes regarding the handling of classified information, our judgment is that no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case. Prosecutors necessarily weigh a number of factors before deciding whether to bring charges. There are obvious considerations like the strength of the evidence, especially regarding intent. Responsible decisions also consider the context of a person's actions and how similar situations have been handled in the past. In looking back at our investigations into the mishandling or removal of classified information, we cannot find a case that would support bringing criminal charges on these facts. All the cases prosecuted involved some combination of clearly intentional and willful mishandling of classified information, or vast quantities of information exposed in such a way as to support an inference of intentional misconduct, or indications of disloyalty to the United States, or efforts to obstruct justice. We do not see those things here. To be clear, this is not to suggest that in similar circumstances, a person who engaged in this activity would face no consequences. To the contrary, those individuals are often subject to security or administrative sanctions, but that's not what we're deciding now. As a result, although the Department of Justice makes final decisions on matters like this, we are expressing to Justice our view that no charges are appropriate in this case.
Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. Annie McCarthy is the former federal prosecutor who sent the blind sheikh up the river in the 1993 World Trade Center bombings. He is a wonderful author and expert on the Muslim Brotherhood and writes over at National Review. And I was very curious to hear what Andy would have to say about this because he's a friend of Comey's and he is also a brilliant legal mind. He put it this way: in order to give Mrs. Clinton a pass, the FBI rewrote the statute. Which statute? Well, as he points out, Hillary Clinton checked every box required for a felony violation of the Federal Penal Code, Section 793F, if you want to know, out of Title 18. With lawful access to highly classified information, she acted with gross negligence in removing and causing it to be removed from its proper place of custody, and she transmitted it and caused it to be transmitted to others not authorized to have it in patent violation of her trust. This whole thing about intent is ridiculous. You don't have to prove intent to show that she was negligent. And are we all to assume, as thinking American adults, that Hillary Clinton, with all of her vast experience in the public realm as an attorney, as Secretary of State, as a Senator of the United States, she just had absolutely no idea that putting together all these email servers off premises and doing it all in sort of this clandestine fashion and having all these different devices and deleting this, she just had no idea what was going on, folks. She didn't know. Well, if she didn't know, and I'm not saying she didn't know, but if she didn't know, what does that say about her ability and her intelligence at somebody at that level of government? How in the world can you trust somebody? In fact, people are now raising the very intelligent question, how can this woman have national security clearance if she is elected president of the United States, given her past handling of classified information? And I saw something even funnier when I was looking at some of the liberal diatribes on this whole matter, trying to say, yes, well, General Petraeus was found guilty of this misdemeanor involving the, you know, the issue of classified information and revealing that to the woman who was doing his biography with whom he was having an affair. But it's really not the same as Hillary Clinton because he admitted he was lying. And so there you go. He admitted he was lying. And, oh, and by the way, it really was worse because, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Of course there is a difference between somebody who is at the level of the Secretary of State not knowing what she's doing, allegedly, and somebody at a low level of government not knowing what they are doing. How could anybody who sets up a private email server not know what he or she is doing? Of course she knew what she was doing. This is why people are so upset today. Why doesn't the rule of law apply to the Clintons? Why doesn't the rule of law apply to the left? And does the left even believe in the rule of law at all? And that's what's coming up. In fact, it's interesting. Here we are right off July 4th. And there were an awful lot of people saying, how should we even feel about our independence? It doesn't even feel like freedom is what it used to be. And I remembered this book, Lex Rex. Do you remember Lex Rex? Have you ever heard of Lex Rex? This is the book published in 1644 by Samuel Rutherford. Now, you can get a copy of this still online. I think you can even get a free copy of it if you look online. The whole point of this Scottish Presbyterian minister's book was to say that the law is king. The king is not the law. And it was Rutherford's work that inspired John Locke, who then influenced the founders. This was kind of the chain of events that occurred prior to the founding of our nation. And what was his point? The law, as this was echoed by David Koppel over at the Washington Post a couple of days ago, the law, not the individual who heads the government, is the supreme ruler. The true source of law is not the king's will, but God's will. King made law that is inconsistent with God's law of natural justice and goodness is mere pretend law, not true law. Are we back now to a day and age in which we have the divine right of king? She's not even the king. She was the Secretary of State. But if you look at what has happened in the last 8 years under Barack Obama, the lawlessness, the sense of entitlement, I'm above the law, Congress is moving too slowly. This is what these people do. And if you think that Hillary Clinton will get into office and not continue that pattern under Barack Obama, I think that you need to go back and read some more news stories and look a little bit more closely at some of what has occurred over the last 8 years and how she believes she can get away with pretty much anything. And it's very hard, I would think, at this juncture to be able to argue that she is completely incorrect. Look at all the scandals going back to the days of Bill and Hillary in the 90s. Look at all of those scandals where there was really no justice. Yes, of course, her husband was impeached, but he was not removed from office. Did they really suffer? Did they really suffer for everything that went on during the Clinton years? Or did they just go on to new money? And by the way, what about the FBI's investigation of the Clinton Foundation and possible corruption between the Clinton Foundation and the State Department? Is anybody going to be able to ask about that? We'll see. We're going to go to a break. This is Janet Mefford in today for Tony Perkins here on Washington Watch. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away.
Hello everyone, I'm Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we'll visit on our spiritual heritage tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon is the United States Marine Corps Memorial, also known as the Iwo Jima Memorial, built in 1954 and the largest bronze statue in the world. Stephen McDowell, who's the president of the Providence Foundation, a historian, will join us all along the way, answer questions, talk about the people, the places, and the events in our nation's capital, and then on to Mount Vernon, the home of George Washington. In addition, we'll go to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown for those who want to join us for this separate trip, which just precedes the Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon tour. For all the information on either of these tours, just visit us on the website, spiritualheritagetours.com. Again, this is in September. Go to the website, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Ephesians chapter 5 tells us to make the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. God has given the American Family Association opportunities to increase our reach and influence in 8 radio markets with the potential for 2.5 million new listeners. In addition, American Family Studios has started work on a new documentary project titled The God Who Speaks, Reaffirming Biblical Authority. As we work to fund these projects and others, here's American Family Association President Tim Wildman.
The bottom line is this, folks. It costs a lot of money to operate American Family Association and our ministries like AFA, AFR, American Family Studios, the things that we do to impact the culture for Christ. But if we don't do it, the cost is going to be even higher, namely the loss of religious freedom and the increasing marginalization of Christians.
For more information, visit AFR.net or call 800-326-4543. America cannot wait.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. The pursuit of holiness, what we place before our eyes does impact. I remember as a younger father sitting down on the floor with my then 4-year-old son. We were watching a video of a circus act where the baby elephant put its front feet upon the back of the adult elephant and went around the arena. Guess what? My 4-year-old wanted to do likewise, so with me on all fours, my son acted out the part of the baby elephant. Surprising? Not really. What we place before our eyes does impact. I've got the attention, I think, of many listening right now, as you know well what I'm talking about. Not much, though, is said in these days about the destructive impact of pornography. Many pulpits, too, may be silent on this subject, but God's Word and His Holy Spirit aren't. Pursue holiness. Place no wicked thing before your eyes, that God would be glorified and that your heart, mind, and soul would be kept pure. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
We are back on Washington Watch. My name is Janet Mefford, in today for Tony Perkins. So glad you could join us. Our phone number, 866-372-7234. Breaking down the James Comey press conference. Boy, that was really something, wasn't it? And do we even have a rule of law that applies equally to everybody across the board anymore? And why is it that we just have such a weird confluence of events that have occurred in the last few days? We had Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch hanging out together on her plane. And by the way, I just thought this was worth bringing up. Do you remember that it was the FBI that was ordering no photos and no pictures and no cell phones during that meeting of Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch? Doesn't that seem a little strange? You know, as they were asking over at Hot Air, it isn't the FBI's job to tell journalists or private citizens they can't take photographs of a former president and the attorney general. So what were the agents going to do, arrest people for taking a picture or a video? So this raises more questions. What in the world was said between Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch? Already people are speculating. What about Hillary's meeting over the weekend with the FBI? Was that just for show? And then, interestingly enough, we now have the president of the United States, who already has endorsed Hillary Clinton for president, out in Charlotte today, stumping for her. Interesting timing, just hours after James Comey stands up, lays out all the reasons why Hillary Clinton actually should be held criminally liable for what she did with her server, and then ends it all by saying, we're not going to do anything about it because we don't really think that any reasonable prosecutor would take this case. Now, let's go back a little bit to what Andy McCarthy had to say, because this is quite significant. A lot of what Comey was focusing on was the issue of intent. Well, if we don't know that she had an intent to do something wrong, then we really can't go after her. Did the FBI rewrite the statute, as he said? So the added intent element, as he points out, makes no sense. The point of having a statute that criminalizes gross negligence is to underscore that government officials have a special obligation to safeguard national defense secrets And when they fail to carry out that obligation due to gross negligence, they are guilty of serious wrongdoing. And he says the lack of intent to harm our country is irrelevant. People never intend the bad things that happen due to gross negligence. Think about this, for example, in the context of a car accident. You have a teenage boy, for example, who goes out joyriding in dad's Lexus one night, and he has his cell phone on him and he's texting. He decides he just can't wait, even though he's going down the highway at about 55 miles an hour. He just can't wait to text his girlfriend. And so he picks up the cell phone and he texts. And oh no, all of a sudden he's crossing the center line and hitting somebody head on and killing somebody in an oncoming car. Now, one would expect, let's just for argument's sake say that he's a little bit older so we don't have to get into the issue of the fact that he was a minor. Let's say he was 22 years old. So you would think that there would be some sort of discussion of whether or not there was negligence involved, negligent homicide or something along those lines. I'm not an attorney, so I don't know exactly what the charges might be, and this is a fake crime anyway. So, but for sake of discussion, negligence is an interesting term because the negligence that we're discussing here is about just you didn't intend to harm somebody, but you were negligent. You weren't careful. You were careless. And so when somebody does something like that, should that guy get off? I mean, he didn't intend to cross the center line. He just had to send the text. It wasn't his fault. He just crossed the center line. I mean, stuff happens, you know, and I know other people have gone to jail for things like that, and other people have been fined or put on probation or faced all sorts of difficult charges. But boy, this guy just really didn't intend to. And we can't really prove that he intended to. Of course, he was texting and he was going too fast and he wasn't paying attention, but he didn't intend to. This is why it's so ridiculous to talk about intent. Now, another point that is salient. There are other statutes, as Andy points out, that criminalize unlawfully removing and transmitting highly classified information with intent to harm the United States. So even if she was not held liable on this particular statute that was mentioned, there are other laws, and you can go online and you can read about the other laws that people have been opining that she actually broke as well. But for now, I guess we're just going to have to wait and see what happens. Chuck Grassley, I was gratified to see, the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, is now calling on the FBI to release the evidence that was gathered surrounding the investigation into Hillary Clinton's email use when she was Secretary of State. They're calling for some transparency. I hope they get somewhere on this. Congress better do something on this. We are going to lose all the confidence that has been gained on the issue of the rule of law if Congress doesn't step in the gap and begin to act like Congress ought to act and begin to say to the American people, the rule of law matters to some of us. The rule of law should matter to everybody, but it should matter most of all to those we have elected to uphold it. So we will see what happens from there. Now, I want to transition a little bit because not only is this story important, and we want to hear from you at 866-372-7234 in just a few moments, but there is another incredibly important story out there that I think you need to know about, and it regards the future of religious freedom in the United States. You might have heard that just a few days ago, the Supreme Court decided not to review a very important case out of Washington State regarding a requirement that pharmacists have to dispense the morning after pill to women without the ability to cite a religious exemption. And with the Supreme Court declining to review the case, the conservatives on the court, interestingly enough, noted that this is an ominous sign for religious liberty. This is a case involving the Stormans family, strong Christians who have stood on principle with their own pharmacy. And we're going to get some reaction to all of this today from their attorney, Kristen Wagoner, who is senior counsel and senior vice president of U.S. Legal Advocacy with Alliance Defending Freedom. Kristen, so good to have you here. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, now, this is interesting. Justice Samuel Alito derided the fact that the Supreme Court, as he put it, didn't deem the case worthy of its time. So tell us what happened here. I guess we need to run to a very quick break. We'll set you up, though, Kristen. Hang on just a moment. We're going to go to a very quick break. We will come back on Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. My name is Janet Mefford. More on this Stormans case at the Supreme Court, a case that the Supreme Court decided not to review, and the implications for all of us on the issue of religious freedom. We'll come back right after this. Stay with us.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, we've got a number of different pieces of data points that we ought to be considering this week. Factory orders, they are coming out early in the week. That is a very important number. It is expected to be a negative 0.9%. That's not good news, by the way. It was a positive 1.9%. That's almost a 3% swing if it ends up coming in a negative 0.9%. A lot of people believe it's going to be lower than that. I am one of those. I wouldn't be surprised to see it at over 1%. Negative territory, but we'll have to see. The ISM service sector number is expected to be up slightly. It was at 52.9 last look. It's expected to be at 53.3. This is different than the manufacturing sector number, which a lot of people believe I would be included in this as well, that the service sector is certainly the biggest part of our economy. We know that. So it would stand to reason that service sector numbers would be a little bit more important than would manufacturing. Of course, the big number that everybody's going to be waiting for is going to be non-farm payroll numbers for the month of June, and that will be out on Friday at the end of the week. Non-farm payrolls are expecting only 170,000. And by the way, last look, it was 25,000. Remember, it was a horrible number last month. They're expecting 170, which again would not be a good number. Hourly earnings also coming out, that's expected to have no change. So the last important number is going to be oil inventories, crude oil inventories. We'll watch that closely. It was a negative 4 million barrels, and those in the oil sector hoping that it stays low.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
We are back on Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. My name is Janet Mefford, and today for Tony, while he's taking a little bit of time off, hope you had a wonderful Independence Day. We are talking about the Comey train wreck, I guess you could call it, and we're also talking a little bit about a very important case out of Washington that was just not reviewed by the Supreme Court. They made a decision not to review this case involving the Stormans family. Kristen Wagoner from Alliance Defending Freedom is with us. Kristen, sorry about that. Let's kick off a little bit about this reaction from Justice Alito on the Supreme Court. He had made this comment that this case apparently was not worth the time of the majority of the court. Well, tell us what your thoughts are on it.
Well, I think that Justice Alito, it's important to point out, he was joined by two others, Justices Thomas and Justice Roberts. So it was a three-member dissent. It only takes four members in the court to grant cert and hear a case. So it's a little bit unusual. But what the decision said was also quite unusual in the terms of the dissent. As you pointed out, it led with a statement, the opening sentence is that this case is an ominous sign. In the first paragraph, the three justices said that for those who care about religious freedom, the court's decision not to reverse the Ninth Circuit decision and hear this case should cause us great concern.
Yes.
And essentially what the Supreme Court did in denying the case is turn a blind eye, as the Ninth Circuit did, to the evidence that was before the court at the Ninth Circuit, and agree to allow the state to get away with discriminating on the basis of religion against pharmacies and pharmacists. And we expect this to continue and spread throughout the United States now that the court has been willing to turn a blind eye to it. I will add, too, that it's always speculation as to why a court doesn't take the case, but in a footnote, the three justices encouraged the Stormans family to file another lawsuit if the state decides to try to revoke their pharmacy license.
Oh, good. Well, why was it, for those listeners who haven't been following the case very closely, why was it that you have this regulation put into place in the state of Washington that if you are a pharmacist who objects to using or selling abortifacient drugs to patients or who come in and want to buy such drugs, why do they have such a strict rule in place in Washington?
We know through discovery in the case that pro-abortion groups launched a national campaign in 2005 to try to force boards of pharmacy in states to pass these regulations and force providers to have to dispense abortifacient drugs. It's easiest to go after low-hanging fruit, and that would be pharmacists and pharmacies. But next would be the surgical abortions and the doctors, and we can already see the Obama administration taking on that as well. Also, the rule was actually prepared and written by Planned Parenthood, not the Board of Pharmacy in Washington State. And it's very clear from the testimony that it was targeted from the very beginning to go after religious providers, but allow all kinds of other referrals for business, monetary, and convenience reasons to continue to occur.
Right. Well, I think as you've pointed out, you know, one of the things that the Ninth Circuit had talked about was the problem of speed, that in other words, you might have a woman and speed is of the essence. And if she comes to one pharmacy and the pharmacist says, I can't for religious reasons dispense this drug to you, you'll have to go to another pharmacy. She might not have time to get to another pharmacy. This seems a little far-fetched because you even have drug manufacturers who are allowed to not sell drugs related to death penalty cases. Isn't that correct?
Yes, and I would add, there are 10 times more pharmacies, according to the state, that don't stock a drug simply because they don't want to, it's a hassle, or for convenience reasons, yet the state has done nothing to require pharmacies to stock those drugs. They've only gone after a religious objector to abortifacients. And after a full trial in Washington state, the trial court found that not one person in the entire state of Washington had been denied access, timely access to any drug in the entire region. So that's a red herring. It's not a real problem. Access to these drugs is widespread.
What kind of chilling effect do you think, Kristen, will come about because of this? We've already seen some things, some opinion pieces regarding this issue that says, is it going to come to the point where Christians can't be pharmacists? If we have this precedent set where the Supreme Court won't even review the issue with a case like this, how does that bode for other Christian pharmacists around the country?
Well, on the one hand, it's frightening in some sense because it's clear that the agenda is to force Christians out of the marketplace, whether you're a healthcare provider, a teacher, a counselor, a lawyer, whatever your occupation is. If you don't agree with the government's ideology, pro-abortion groups and others are trying to force you out. At the same time, though, I think for the Stormans family and for Rhonda Messler, who's a pharmacist who is going to have to look to move to another state, they're back up on their feet, and they will stand for religious freedom and continue to do that. And we will ensure that the state enforces this regulation in an even-handed manner, or it will face another lawsuit.
Good. That's good, because a lot of people are wondering, what will the Stormans family do now? As you mentioned, they have the option of filing another lawsuit. But for the time being, if they have people coming in and saying, we want Plan B, what do they plan to do?
Well, the family will be getting together to meet. They will not violate their conscience. We know that. And there are 33 pharmacies within 5 miles of Ralph's pharmacy that stock the drug. So the drug is very available. They haven't had a significant customer demand in the past. It's always been test shoppers that are coming in because of these groups, pro-abortion groups, that have a test shopping campaign against them. So we'll need to find out, what is the state going to do and how will it respond to activists who are doing nothing more than promoting a political agenda and hurting patient care?
Absolutely. Well, Kristen Wagoner from Alliance Defending Freedom. Kristen, thank you so much for stopping by. We appreciate you and thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. And we'll be in prayer, too, for the Stormans family. They stand up for our religious freedom when they stand up for their own, as we well know. This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. Janet Mefford sitting in today for Tony. We're going to take your calls next. 866-372-7234. Thoughts on Comey, thoughts on Hillary Clinton in the email server. Usurpation of the law, whatever you want to call it, as well as the Supreme Court decision. When we come back next, 866-372-7234.
Does the U.S. Senate have a responsibility to confirm anyone that President Obama nominates to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat? After the passing of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, an intense political debate has emerged around this crucial question. The Constitution does not require conditions or limitations on the manner in which the Senate must act if the President nominates. Family Research Council believes that the Senate should not consider or deliberate on any nominee President Obama puts forward to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat. This is because the President has consistently nominated Supreme Court justices and federal judges who view the Constitution as a malleable political instrument instead of a text with a defined meaning based on the consensus held by the Founding Fathers. To learn more about this critical issue, including 8 helpful questions and answers, visit frc.org/Supreme Court. That's frc.org/Supreme Court.
What are alumni saying about Wesley Biblical Seminary? Here's WBS Professor for Formation and Instruction, Rebecca Luman.
I suppose I'd been quite a bit of a lone ranger in my Christian faith, and I saw that it really was something we do together. My vision of what God wanted to do in the world just exploded.
I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary. Come and be a part of our community.
Apply today at wbs.edu. Wesley Biblical Seminary. Discover the difference.
There's been some confusion between the title of Engage magazine and the term engaged.
Alyssa, would you marry me?
Oh, Todd.
See, now that's what I mean. Engage magazine is a ministry to millennials, while getting engaged is...
Oh, Todd.
Oh, Alyssa.
Right. The thing is, we want you to be engaged.
Yes, 1,000 times yes.
That's sweet. But Engage magazine is about being engaged with your faith and the culture. Visit engagemagazine.net and listen Saturday afternoons at 5:30 Central on AFR.
I'm John Riley. I want to let you know about an opportunity that you have to reach out to families in West Virginia who are affected by a major disaster. Flooding has overtaken much of West Virginia, and they need our help. There are families there that are hurting and struggling, but there's a wonderful ministry called Hope Reigns that's actually on the ground right now, wrapping their arms around those homeowners. You can make a difference. You can volunteer and help these homeowners through this wonderful ministry called Hope Reigns. If you want to volunteer, you want to help, please give them a call right now and say, I would love to volunteer there in West Virginia. They need your help. 662-255-7565. That's 662-255-7565. Or you can go online, 8daysofhope.com, 8daysofhope.com. Please pray for them, and if you want to give financially, they could use that as well.
Welcome back to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. My name is Janet Mefford. In today for Tony, so glad you could join us. Our toll-free number, 866-372-7234. We're talking a lot about whether or not James Comey, the FBI director, did the right thing or the wrong thing. I mean, are we really talking about that? I shouldn't say it that way. We're talking about why in the world James Comey did what he did. And is the rule of law still the rule of law? Is the law still king in this great republic of ours? Or have we crossed the line of no return? Have we now gone past the point with the left where the rule of law will ever make a full recovery? And I don't mean to be too hyperbolic about it. I understand that we have all sorts of laws on the books that are upheld and that are enforced and that people are prosecuted. The problem is when you have a particular class of person who is not prosecuted for clear violations of the law because that person happens to have a very elevated position in this society, has a lot of powerful friends, and has great name recognition, that person should skirt the rule of law because she's famous, because she is powerful, because who knows why. People are already asking, well, okay, now what happened? We had John Roberts ruling the way he did on Obamacare. Everybody wondered, well, did somebody get to John Roberts? That's been bandied about ever since that terrible Obamacare decision. And now people are saying, is the same thing occurring with James Comey? I'm not saying that, but I am saying that there are a lot of people who are wondering what in the world is going on. And now, here's the question. You have an FBI that we rely upon to do things like protecting us, enforcing the law, doing criminal investigations, prosecuting, but also to deal with things like terrorism. We already know from the reports of people like Philip Haney over at the Department of Homeland Security. He's come out with his book, See Something, Say Nothing. I interviewed him a couple of days ago, and he was talking about how he did all of this dot connection stuff over at the Department of Homeland Security when it came to the issue of terrorism. And had he not been asked to take those dot connections out of the system, that in fact the San Bernardino jihad could have been stopped, and probably they would have been able to identify the Orlando jihadist. So now, does this cast a terrible light on the FBI and the trust of the American people when it comes to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. This is a whole nother level. Now you're looking at a particular agency that hasn't been mentioned so much in terms of politics and being able to trust them. We've talked about the DOJ quite a bit in that regard under Eric Holder and then under Loretta Lynch. We've talked about the administration, whether or not this is really important to the administration anymore, the rule of law. Now we have to look at the FBI, which is supposed to be dealing with the law. So how does this stand with you? What do you think about the state of the rule of law as it applies evenly to every person in America, famous or not? We're going to go to your calls. 866-372-7234 here on Washington Watch. And let's first go to Louisiana. We have Ben on the line. Ben, how are you? Have we got you, Ben?
Good to hear your program.
Hey, yep. Great to have you here. What are your thoughts?
Well, first and foremost, I got to say that it was a pretty weak thing that James did to hang everything on finding a reasonable lawyer to prosecute.
Right.
I believe we have more than enough unreasonable lawyers that would be glad to jump on this. But I hate that it sets a new standard and a new precedent for what is to be done with classified information. If
right.
she can get away with this, then anybody can start using their personal service and not worry about being prosecuted.
Right. The standard
that it...
Trying to make
it easier for people like Snowden.
Yep. Exactly right. Thank you for that remark, because that's the case. If Hillary can get away with it, then why couldn't I get away with it? If I was a low-level government employee and I had the means to be able to set up my own private email server and I maybe had access to certain levels of classified information, maybe not the top secret level, but maybe I had access to some information that average ordinary Americans didn't, can I just set up my own private email server and skirt the accountability that I need to have as a public servant? See, this is the issue, folks. This is a woman seeking the highest office in the land, the leader of the free world. And this is a woman who thinks so little of national security and compromising national security that she would do something like this. And then you have millions of Americans who are being asked to vote for her and give her more power than anybody in the world to be able to have continued access to classified information. What is she going to do when she's president if she's elected? What will she do with national security items, with classified information, with top secret information? Do you trust her? Do the people who have supported Hillary all along trust her? I don't know. All right. Thanks for the call, Ben. Appreciate it. Let's go next to Missouri. And we've got James on the line. James, welcome to Washington Watch.
I believe that this goes a lot further. I think there is probably collusion, that steps are being made to keep Hillary in the race and to eliminate any possibility of Trump becoming the next president. I think the collusion goes with the FBI, the president, and the Democratic Party. And I don't really believe that's what Americanism is all about.
When you talk about collusion, what exactly do you mean? Do you believe that somebody colluded with the FBI on this? Do you believe that it was just collusion between Lynch and the Clintons? What do you mean?
Yeah, I think there was a political move, and it was a chess move, to have this meeting so that Loretta Lynch could be removed on her own accord because of the meeting that she had.
Right.
I believe that what the FBI found in most other cases, had it not be for that person running for president, would probably have been indicted. If it was you or me, I'm sure we would have been indicted. But I think the whole motivation here is to eliminate Republicans from becoming the president. I don't think the Democrats want in any way to have Trump, even remote possibility. So anything that can be done to eliminate him, I believe that's exactly what's taken place.
Now, here's a question, though. There are those who believe that by doing this, it might backfire on the Democrats. They may seem so corrupt by doing something like this that it could actually help Donald Trump. Do you think that that's a possibility, that, in fact, Donald Trump might benefit from this move?
I do believe that possibility exists. If it is pointed out more and more to the American people, this is what our government is really all about. And do you want another 4 or 8 years of what we've had in the past 8 years?
Right.
And I think then the Republicans will probably take over.
We'll see, won't we? Thanks a lot, James. I appreciate the call. And I think that there is a lot that's going to happen. To me, this is just a gold mine for Trump to be able to put into his campaign ads. My goodness. I mean, this is something that is political gold for the other side. Now, I don't know how it will be played. Who knows how these things play out? But really, when people look at the corruption involved, the fact that we don't, as I mentioned before, even know the state of the investigation on the State Department and its possible corruption involving the Clinton Foundation, we don't even know what's going on with that. It just is not good, optics-wise, that you're sending a message to the American people, we're going to do everything behind closed doors and you don't get to know and forget you, and we're not going to turn over this many emails. The State Department has been stonewalling on, oh, well, we can't get those emails out to you, we can't get those emails out to you. And then Hillary stands up and puts on a pretty suit and talks about how it's really all about those nasty, vast, right-wing conspiracy people who are making her look like this. But really, what she wants to get back to is talking about the issues that affect us as Americans, as long as it's not Benghazi. 866-372-7234. Let's go next to Alabama. We have Roger on the line. Roger, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Janet, for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I would just like to say, when they were trying to get the health care bill passed, one of the old representatives, somebody asked a question about the rules, and he said, we're trying to do something up here. We makes up the rules as we go.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. They make up the rules as they go, and they get by with it.
Well, this is the problem, and I think what we really need to be focusing on is whether or not the American people want to live in a republic like that and want to live in a country like that. Already people are throwing around the phrase banana republic, because this is how banana republics act. You have people who are at the top of the pyramid acting like they're not accountable to the people beneath. And if this isn't what that is in terms of a demonstration of that attitude, I don't know what would be. I don't know what would be. We've seen this from the Clinton family for years, that we get to do what other people don't get to do, and the attitude that is put about, because it's all about the agenda. We've seen it from Barack Obama. It's about the agenda. It's about getting things done. Let me be clear, the president often says. Let me be clear. We cannot wait anymore. How many times have you heard that over the last 8 years? We can't wait anymore. It's about the agenda, folks. It's about something bigger than Hillary Clinton. The left would like Hillary Clinton to win the election because Hillary Clinton will usher in this leftist paradise that they envision. Unfortunately, it wouldn't be such a paradise for the rest of us. Thanks for the call. Let's go next to Virginia. Let's talk with Bryce. Bryce has a comment on the Hillary issue. Bryce, welcome.
Yes, ma'am. I heard what y'all said and played the clip on the FBI director and his comments today, and in recommending on his recommendations.
And, hey, Bryce, speak up a little bit if you could. I'm having a hard time hearing you. Can you speak up just a bit?
Okay, yes, ma'am. The FBI director said something about vast amounts of information, and that there wasn't vast amounts of information on the highly classified information. And I thought, well, it would only take one piece of highly classified information to jeopardize some of our troops and government officials. And another thing was hearing his recommendations and something on intent. It's 100% clear to me there was an intent. There was 30,000 emails on a private server.
Right. Right. I mean, this is what's so insane about it. We're supposed to believe, as thinking adults, that she didn't know what she was doing. Oops. Somehow a server just popped up in my house. Oops, somehow multiple servers just popped up in my house. Oops, I just wanted to be on one device. Oops, there were more than one device. There were many devices. Oh, golly gee, I just want to get back to the issues that matter to the American people. I'll bet you do. I'll bet you do. But the problem is, if we don't have leaders that follow the rule of law, if we don't have prosecutors that follow the rule of law, the people notice and the people, I mean, should we all just kind of act as if laws don't matter? What would it be like if the average ordinary American citizen, who callers have rightly pointed out, would certainly be indicted and jailed, prosecuted for something like this, much less than this, if our name wasn't Clinton? Should we just stop obeying the rule of law? I mean, you have anarchy. Should I just start blowing off stop signs now? I mean, Hillary doesn't have to be accountable for breaking the law. Why should I? Hillary did it. Why can't I do it? Of course we wouldn't do that, because we have an inner respect for the rule of law. But when your quest is about making sure that you win an election, then everything is just, I guess it just works in your favor if you have the right personality and the right connections and the right donors and the right people in your corner. That's how it looks. That's how it looks to way too many people. I want to try to slip in one more call if we can. We've got David on the line in Arkansas talking about the abortion drug issue. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for taking the call. On the abortion, you know, it's kind of funny. You hear the left, liberal people and everything talking about separation of church and state. And right. They want the church out of the state. Why don't the state get out of the church?
Oh, no, it doesn't work. Yeah, it doesn't work that way. You've noticed it doesn't. It's a one way street. It's sort of like we're supposed to have tolerance for the homosexual activists, but they have no tolerance for us. Isn't that nice? The system they've set up. Everybody is supposed to be tolerant to them, but they don't have to be tolerant of us.
There's no two way streets anymore. As far as Washington goes. And, you know, like the Bible says, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and bow down and ask God, he'll heal this nation. So the Christians need to get on their knees and start praying.
Amen, David. Amen. You know, it's interesting that you would say that, because yesterday I decided 4th of July has such mixed emotions for me now, especially after the Obergefell decision last year. I have to confess, I'm looking at my country through different eyes. I love my country. I'm grateful for my country, but I am burdened and I am anxious for my country like I've never been before. And I sat down and I reread the entire book of Revelation, because I said, Lord, I just need to get an entirely eternal perspective on this world. We are so tempted at times as Christians to look upon everything that's occurring in the world and think, this is all there is, and I just should despair at every political turn and at every issue of corruption that arises, every incident that comes up that is disheartening to me. But the reality is, Jesus is Lord. He's been Lord always. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And for those of us who know him, who love him, who are called according to his purpose, and we are here to glorify him, we can have a hope that we can go forward, but we also should have courage to stand up in this hour for the principles upon which our nation is based, to stand for them and to be unafraid to stand for those principles, because they are right. We are out of time. We thank you so much for tuning in today here on Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. We thank you for listening. My name is Janet Mefford. It's been a pleasure to be with you. And we thank you so much for being with us. God bless. Thanks a lot for listening.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.